This is Morning Edition on 89.1 WEMU, and I'm David Fair. And on the first Friday of each month, we take occasion to discuss a topic of environmental pertinence to our state, our county, and to our hometown. Lisa Wozniak is Executive Director of the Michigan League of Conservation Voters and serves as host of WEMU's first Friday Focus on the Environment. And on this month's show, Lisa's going to take her attention to Flint.
My guest today is Professor Marty Kaufman, who specializes in water resources, urban groundwater contamination, urban hydrology, and sustainable systems at the University of Michigan Flint. Amid the ongoing Flint water crisis, Professor Kaufman is currently heading up a team of researchers who are identifying and mapping the location of all the lead service lines in the city. Welcome to the show, Professor Kaufman.
Thank you, David. Thank you, Lisa.
This is a crisis of such significance that it's garnering state, national, and even international attention. The Flint water disaster has left about 100,000 people without safe drinking water. Tell me, how is it that you got pulled into this crisis in the mapping of the Flint city service lines?
Well, we were following the events, and we certainly aware of the lead testing that Professor Mark Edwards of Virginia Tech did, which revealed that there was a high level of lead in Flint's drinking water. And then when Dr. Hannah Tisha's results confirmed that through high blood lead level testing, we, meaning the GIS Center at the University of Michigan Flint, and approached the City Water Department and offered our assistant to help map the lead lines in the city.
So you work at the University of Michigan Flint's campus. Do you actually live in Flint proper?
No, I don't.
Okay, so you're not among those directly impacted by water contamination, but I'm sure you have colleagues, friends that are directly impacted. Does this connection make it an even more personal mission to help fix the problem?
It certainly does, but, you know, I think to say that people who don't live in Flint are not impacted is not completely accurate, because a lot of people over the 19 months that the city was using, you know, that the lead scare, that the lead was high in the water, and it still is high, a lot of people were commuting into Flint. We have between 30 and 50,000 people who on a regular basis come into Flint to work or go to school.
Right.
And they were drinking the water as well. A lot of our students included, and myself included. So yes, it is personal.
With all of this attention given to the Flint disaster, citizens throughout the state, the nation, are now aware that aging pipes present a threat, notably in urban, older communities. Can you talk a little bit about how serious this risk is?
It's a risk on different levels. I mean, you have biological problems when old pipes age, because if they break, there's potential for contamination getting into the pipe system, which is why you see boil water alerts after pipes break usually. You have lead issues. Older cities have a lot of, you know, have many lead service lines, and these service lines can leach lead into the system. That's just outside. Inside, you've got people who have brass faucets, and brass before 2011 had as much as 8% lead as part of its constituents. So that can leach lead into the system. You have copper pipes, which are brazed together with solder, and that solder before 1986 could also contain lead. So, you know, a comprehensive evaluation of where lead is in a drinking water supply system would be very, very beneficial to everybody in the United States. And studies have shown that this isn't as much a cost as it is a benefit. Because for every dollar we invest in lead abatement, studies have shown that we get a return in savings through health care and less social services required for people who are affected by lead poisoning of between $17 and $221.
89.1 WEMU's first Friday Focus on the Environment continues. I'm Lisa Wozniak, and we're talking about the Flint water crisis with Professor Marty Kaufman. Professor Kaufman, as you've been doing this work to begin mapping the service lines, have there been any big surprises coming out of your team's research so far?
Well, we knew from the onset, once we looked at the original data where the information was derived, that there were going to be a lot of challenges. The big problem is that there's just so much missing data. we probably have over 10,000 parcels where we don't know what the pipe composition is.
Just no information at all.
Right. And originally, a lot of the information was placed on 3x5 cards and stored in the city in much what looked like an old card catalog in a library. And a lot of those cards were written in pencil. They were smeared. And it was very difficult to see the information on the card. But fortunately, they transferred a lot of that information onto paper parcel maps, and then they scanned those maps with the code of what the service line connection into the house was. So, for instance, on a parcel, any particular parcel, they may have written a C, which indicated copper, or they wrote C-L, which indicated copper to lead, or vice versa. Once those maps were scanned, and there were 240 separate maps, we at least had a basis to begin our work to turn those scanned images, and knit them together, transfer that code into a parcel database where we can manipulate the information even more.
Wow, it's a huge job. And these are just the lead service lines currently being mapped by your team, but there must be other sources of lead contamination that you have to consider as well as you do this work.
Well, sure. As you know, I mentioned before, you've got, to do an evaluation of lead in a drinking water system, and even in a, I would argue it would be necessary to look at a whole house evaluation. I mean, you start at the tap and work backwards all the way to the lake.
Right.
And, you know, we still have problems with lead paint in homes and lead soil, or lead soil that has been contaminated from when cars were using tetraethyl lead as an anti-knock compound. And, kids go out in the yard and they put their hands in the soil and then they put their hands in their mouth. And that's a major source and a pathway for lead to getting into children's bodies.
You're listening to 89.1 WEMU and our first Friday Focus on the Environment. I'm Lisa Wozniak, and we're talking about the Flint water crisis with Professor Marty Kaufman. Professor Kaufman, the science has been there all along, as you've mentioned. And before this was even a national issue, there were complaints and public hearings in Flint about the water. In fact, among many indicators of this being a problem, there was Al Jazeera America reporting on the water issues facing the city in January of 2015, which is more than a year ago now. The scientists, as you mentioned, at Virginia Tech were pushing the issue forward. The evidence appears to have been overwhelming, and more so, it seems, every day. When the state finally started to pay attention, the issue entered what we can refer to as the body politic and the bureaucratic process. Is this a source of frustration to you as a scientist that in politics, facts and evidence are sometimes, maybe oftentimes, politicized?
That's a great question. I think it can be a source of frustration, but what we have to remember is that we have to stay focused on what we need to do in order to solve the problem and not worry about perhaps the gap between science and policy. We just have to keep plugging ahead. I think one thing that we need to do in these situations is we often lose sight of other places that have gone through similar types of events and use those lessons to help us guide our remediation efforts here. For instance, in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, in 1993, a major contamination event occurred when cryptosporidium, which is a protozoan that can cause severe gastrointestinal distress, entered the public water supply. It sickened 400,000 people and killed 69. So there's a situation where the public lost confidence in their public water supply, which is similar to what's happened in Flint. So looking at what Milwaukee did in terms of response and what measures they use can be instructive for what we need to do in the city of Flint to help get people's confidence back. And I would say, in my opinion, let's first talk about what Milwaukee did. They started at the lake. They looked at where their input water was coming from, and they decided that there was a better place to put their inlet pipe. And they demonstrated this to the people by doing water tests and being completely transparent about it. So they actually moved their inlet pipe farther out into Lake Michigan to improve their source of supply. Then they went into the water plant where they treated the water and they made changes to their filtration system and spent millions of dollars to indicate this is not going to happen again. And then they went even one step further by exceeding the requirement of just testing 91 required contaminants under the Safe Drinking Water Act, and they began testing for more possible contaminants in the system, things like traces of pharmaceuticals. That gave the public confidence that the water department and the officials were on top of things and they're prepared for challenges in the future. Translating that lesson into what might be applicable for response here in Flint, the image is that the lead pipes are definitely the source of the problem. So at a minimum, those need to go.
So
and then, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, this is an excellent example, and I'm really curious to know, through this example, what you see happening here in Michigan to address this problem, this crisis, in a way that actually offers that kind of transparency and the rebuilding of the public trust.
I think it's a little bit early to, you know, things, people are still getting on the ground here from the federal government and the EPA and FEMA, and it's hard to know everything that is going to be done or has been planned. Things are rapidly changing. I think some of us are starting to see some traction with the federal efforts, and that's good. And hopefully we can move this in the right direction.
89.1 WEMU and our first Friday Focus on the Environment. I'm Lisa Wozniak, and we're talking about the Flint water crisis with Professor Marty Kaufman. Professor Kaufman, with all the changes in this landscape, things are changing day to day. New agencies are getting involved at a more significant level, it seems, with each passing day. How does this change your role and the work that you and your team are doing?
Well, we're going, you know, hopefully, you know, we can cooperate with whatever requests they have for information and for geographic information systems. We have an excellent crew at the University of Michigan Flint and our GIS center, and we're willing and able to help any of the federal agencies for any request they may have to help the people of Flint.
From your scientific perspective, what can listeners do to ensure that their own water is safe to drink?
Well, the recommendations are that they flush the water quite for a while before they drink it from the tap. They also should have a filter that's a certified filter for lead.
And that's in Flint. But, I mean, any of the listeners throughout this area, which includes cities that are not in Flint, people are concerned. They're now thinking that any urban center in which they live, any tap that they turn on, may have similar problems, given the fact that lead has been found in so many different places around this state and this country. Are there things that people should be thinking about day to day?
Well, again, people could just start at the tap and work backwards. Go through their house, look and see if they've got old, you know, if they've got an old house, for sure. I would, you know, it'd be beneficial to bring a plumber in and do a professional evaluation of the plumbing system to see if there is old solder. Some of the test kits that are used to test for lead paint can also be used to test for lead solder on the pipes. So that's something worth doing. Looking at where the brass fixtures are. The federal government had passed an amendment to the law which required brass fixtures to have less than 0.25% lead content after 2011. But before that, brass had as much as 8%, and some of that could leach into the water, given proper chemistry, which may occur when treatment varies at different times of the year. So looking for the lead, you can also test your incoming service line by going to your water meter, and then below the inlet valve on the right side, typically there'll be exposed pipe, and you can take a key or a blunt instrument and a magnet and scrape it a little bit. I'd recommend a professional do this. We don't want people puncturing their inlet pipe to their water. But if it looks like a penny, then you know you got copper coming in. If it's gray and metallic, it's galvanized. But if it's gray and metallic and not magnetic, then you got lead coming in.
So this issue is going to be something that the city of Flint is dealing with for the foreseeable future. In your role and as a member of the community, as part of the University of Michigan Flint faculty, what is your greatest hope for the changes that need to happen in the city in the near term and, frankly, in the long term to address this crisis?
Well, we would hope that in the long term, people would regain confidence in their water supply and also in their public officials. And I think right now those two things are linked. And that I would hope that all of my colleagues at the University of Michigan Flint, we just had a summit of researchers here last Friday where we had over 140 researchers who want to do something about this problem. So there's intense interest. There's, you know, extraordinary will to try to help people get through this problem right now.
Professor Kaufman, thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you.
That is Professor Marty Kaufman of the University of Michigan Flint, who is currently identifying and mapping the location of all the lead service lines in Flint, a big and extremely important job. I'm Lisa Wozniak, inviting you to join me next month for the next edition of 89.1 WEMU's First Friday Focus on the Environment.
Lisa Wozniak is Executive Director of the Michigan League of Conservation Voters. WEMU's First Friday Focus on the Environment is a monthly feature and is heard on the first Friday of each month. For more information on today's feature and to visit our archive, go to our webpage at WEMU.org.